What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution is here to help me with these global tax ideas. There are three of them. We've discussed the idea of a minimum tax globally. Now we turn to the taxes on the 100 largest corporations, multinationals. How you discern that list is important, but we're not addressing that now. I want to raise the possibility of, is this efficient? Richard is a classical liberal, so I'm asking him a question that is transnational. And also, what does this mean about China's large corporations, which are certainly competitive? Will we tax them?
Well, I mean, you're asking all the right questions to which there are no easy answers. But let's just assume that you could do this thing worldwide and that the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else is going to be drawn into the same pot. What you do is you look at these large corporations and you have to ask two questions. One, is this stuff the result of efficiencies? Two, is this stuff the result of restraint on trade? If it's a result of restraint on trade, then presumably some kind of an antitrust remedy would be appropriate. But that would not be to the entire firm. It would be with respect to the particular practices given lines of commerce that might be subject to it. So if you wish to attack Apple or Google, they engage in 1,000 different practices. 998 of them may be legal and 2 of them may be wrong. The antitrust solution would pick the 2 or the 20 or the 50 that turn out to be incorrect and then try to go after them. There's a lot of difficulty there because there's a kind of wrong kind of mentality around the United States, the Klobuchar bill, for example, in which everybody starts to see antitrust risk where, frankly, I don't believe that they exist. But that's a fraction. Now, if you want to go with global remedies and you say, okay, we got Jeff Bezos, why are we taxing him when he has huge numbers of employees and huge numbers of satisfied customers? What you're doing is you're taking the largest firms that have earned their money in a legitimate and proper way and subjecting them to the highest possible tax. That's absolutely crazy as a matter of general economic development. If some firm, in fact, on an even tax environment can outperform the others, why do you want to turn around and take strong competitors and suffer them various kinds of disabilities while weak competitors are going to get implicit tax subsidies? What you're doing, in effect, is you're taking from the efficient and giving to the inefficient, all in the name of some kind of parity. If, in fact, you did what you should generally do on this, which is to have a neutral regime, either the income or the consumption or the dividends or the profits, depending on the form of the tax, will follow the gain, so large companies will continue to pay more in total amounts, but no more on a pro rata basis than before. That gives them the incentive to continue to grow. It gives the smaller companies incentive to grow in order to take stuff away from it. Taxes ceases to be a mode of distortion. So this is, again, this kind of business is bad type of mentality, which has taken over the Biden White House, particularly in antitrust with people like Tim Wu and Lena Khan, and now putting it into the tax world. So this is yet another kind of dreadful idea that these characters manage to dream up when what they should be trying to do is to encourage the highest volume of international commerce across borders. What they're trying to do is to stifle the most effective competitors. This makes no sense at all.
And we go to digital taxes. I don't want to start in Washington. I want to start in Paris because several Paris administrations, governments, have been talking about the lack of fairness because companies in Silicon Valley, in California particularly, we can guess which they are extracting money from France and other parts of the European Union and not paying taxes on it because they don't have a presence in France. It's done digitally. I don't understand entirely how they will do a digital tax, but it does immediately come to mind that this is a European opinion that is meant to visit harm upon American companies. I puzzle about that going forward for the Biden administration, but I especially puzzle why America should stand by while France plunders California.
John, again, it's like everything else we do. These are such complicated issues. The exact same issue has arose in the has arisen in the United States on interstate taxation. So you have a physical presence in Illinois, and you have a digital transaction in Tennessee, and it turns out that the customer in Tennessee doesn't pay any tax to the Illinois firm. There's a local firm in Tennessee that also sells on a brick-and-mortar basis, and people have to pay X percent. So what it turns out is you get a favoritism with respect to the digital transactions against the local characters. And so the issue is, why do you do this? Then to just make it a little bit more complicated, the local guy who's there actually gets certain kinds of return services that the digital guy doesn't need. He gets police protection, clean roads, and the right. The digital guy needs nothing from it. So the question then comes back, well, the reason we don't tax the digital fellow is not because we're trying to give him a subsidy, but because, in fact, his need for state support is much smaller than it is on the other guys, and so therefore what we should do is to encourage it. In the United States Supreme Court a couple of years ago, this thing came up, a very divided opinion as to whether or not these taxes were consistent with what they call the Dormant Commerce Clause, which is a commitment by the United States government to make sure that interstate competition is going to be done on competitive principles, and it was held that this kind of a tax was to be allowed. How you put them into place is, again, a real nightmare. It's exactly the same problem that you face in the international type situation with all of the dilemmas. Yes, this stuff comes out. Now, there's another story to it, however, which I think is worth asking. Ask yourself which major digital company, the FANGs or anybody else, has originated in France. And it turns out the number of companies that France has been able to generate in its own backyard is basically zero. And so the question is, well, why is that the case? Well, the United States has many stupid things that we do with respect to regulation, particularly in labor markets and so forth. But whatever is wrong in the United States may be at the level of 10. What's ever wrong in France is probably at the level of 100. And so what happens is we so constrain, if we're Frenchmen, what's going to happen in our own place because of the fear that they're going to displace local workers and so forth, that they don't develop it. So one of the things you could say to France is, for God's sake, instead of trying to tax everybody else, what you should do is to look very hard at your own situation, as Macron from time to time has done, and ask yourself why it is that nothing takes off. So you want to get another illustration. In the United States, we have a gig economy. It works pretty well. You get dumb states like California that have put into place something like the AB 5 regulation. It gets beaten back by a referendum. The Biden administration, home for all bad ideas on local taxation and state taxation, says maybe we ought to do this at a national level. But in France, essentially, this has been successful. And so what happens is the gig economy there is much smaller. If you're a local company who wants to start up in France and then go out worldwide, forget about it. You're never going to get off the ground because of these local kinds of forces. So let us then try to understand what's going on with digital taxes and all intertransactional barriers and so forth. Essentially, what we want to do is to make sure that companies cannot pose differential taxes on somebody else, because if they can do that, they have no incentive to clean up their own internal economy. So one of the things that happens is, if you allow for free movement of goods back and forth across borders under a sensible, non-discriminatory tax regime, if you have a local economy which is highly inefficient...
We have a minute, Richard. 1 minute. Go ahead.
So the moment the foreign guys start to come in, either you're going to have to reform your own domestic system or lose out. So the great advantage of openness is you don't have to figure out exactly what's wrong inside any particular company. So long as the exit rights and entry rights, the people who are local have enormous pressures to clean things up and to make themselves more competitive. Let's be perfectly clear about it. The progressives tend to think if they could run a series of nationwide monopolies, the world would be a better place because they know how to regulate them. Classical liberal believes if you could run an international situation, high degrees of competition in global markets, you don't need the global regulation. What you get instead is global improvement in process. The Biden administration, like all progressive administrations, is on the wrong side of this particular trade-off.
Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, returning us to the genius of Edmund Burke. Men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions for taxes forge their fetters. This is
Oh my God.
Go ahead, Richard. What
you know,
say?
Ironically, it was over. We just had a fellow named Greg Collins speak at the CLI on one of our Zoom lunches, who just wrote a history of Edmund Burke and his commercial republic stuff. You know that?
This is CBS.
It's kind of interesting.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.